All right, I'll read the little introduction, then we'll read the scripture, and then dissect it. Solomon continues to share from his observations on life made during his search for meaning. He observed that one thing that happens to everyone is death, after which one is soon forgotten. But we should not despair, but live joyfully and to work diligently in what time we have in this life. Solomon also observed that the uncertainty of life can be softened with the aid of wisdom, which the preacher praises as better than strength. The words of the wise should be heard, even when spoken softly or coming from a poor man. We each must examine our lives in the context of our culture and circumstance and turn from folly to pursue wisdom. It only takes a small amount of foolishness to ruin everything. Any questions or comments? I need two volunteers. We're going to split this up. Need someone to read verses 1 through 9, and then someone else to 9 through 18. So who would like to read 1 through 9 for us? All right, Rob, John, I'll get you the second half. Okay, Rob.
So I reflected on all this, concluded that the righteous and the wise, what they do are in God's hands. But no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. All share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices, those who not. As it is with the good, so with the sinful. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of people, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live. And afterward, they join the dead. Anyone who is among the living has a hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even their name is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their jealousy has long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. Go, eat your food with gladness, and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has already approved of what you do. Always be clothed in white, and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life, and in your toilsome labor under the sun.
Okay, thanks, Rob. John, would you finish that out, please, 10 through 18?
For whatever your hand finds you to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor planning nor knowledge nor wisdom. I have seen nothing else under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all. How far do you want me to go?
Finish the chapter.
Okay. Moreover, no man knows when his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. But the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are no longer heeded. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good.
Okay, thank you, Rob and John. Before we actually get to the questions, has anyone taken count how many times he said under the sun?
Plenty.
Plenty? Six times in the New American Standard, he uses the term under the sun. And what are we referring to when we say under the sun?
On the earth.
When he refers to above the sun, which he does a few times, of course, that's a heavenly reference. So let's get into the questions. Who and what did the preacher say is in God's hands in verse 1? The righteous and the wise. And what else? He has an and in there. Works or deeds? Yeah. So both the righteous and the wise and their deeds is what he's referring to. So what two observations did he make regarding the righteous and the wicked in verses 2 through 3? And the next three questions actually are sort of linked together. So you might think we're overlapping. But first of all, what two observations did he make regarding the righteous and the wicked?
Common destiny.
Common destiny. What is that destiny? Okay. The main thing is, all things come to light to all people. One thing happens to all. Everyone has the same fate. We can reference Matthew 5:45. Does anyone know what that says? You know it if I start it, but do you know it otherwise? It basically says, he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and ungodliness, the unrighteous. So that's the same principle he's saying in Ecclesiastes there, verse 2. Number 3, what two things does he see in the hearts of men? Verse 3.
Evil and madness.
Some translations say insanity. Does evil and insanity or madness go together? Sometimes they do. Perhaps they don't. Right, Gary?
Perhaps.
Yeah, they can or they cannot. They don't have to out every time. But a lot of times when you see insanity, there is some evil involved. But that is not true, Connie, correct? You were in that business for a few years, so.
But it says, but this is the evil in understanding.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That happens among us, okay. In everything that happens. It happens in everything. This is the evil in everything. Evil in madness.
This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that there is one fate for all men. Furthermore, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil, and insanity is in their hearts throughout their lives. That's New American Standard. What are you reading?
I'm reading NIV.
NIV, okay.
So is he saying that everyone is mad, insane?
I think that's what Pat's question is.
Yeah.
And that's not right,
is it? I don't think that's always true.
So now we're questioning the Bible.
Yeah, we are.
Our
Sorry,
understanding.
Dan, this is not our normal conversation.
Our understanding, though.
Yes.
It just says the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil, and insanity is in their hearts throughout their lives. He's not saying, in my opinion, that he's not saying the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil and always insanity is in their hearts. I think that would be a key word. Anybody have a thought on that?
He could have just been wrong.
Solomon wrong?
Yeah.
He was the wisest man that ever...
I know I've got some insanity in me. I got Jennifer will confirm. Jim will confirm. Any other hand? No, sorry. But
is that what it is?
Not what he would have said.
No. Yeah.
But, well, you know, I look at Rob. Rob has the most organized together mind of anyone I know. just looking around the room. Bernard, there's another one that's pretty well organized, and Shane back there. But, you know, even Rob, I think, would probably be able to admit that there are times that you feel like, what is going on with my brain or something? I don't know at what level.
There's two things. Is it hard to notice that we're full of evil? I think we all are sinners.
We all,
right, yeah. Yeah. That's a definite.
And then he said there's madness in their hearts, and God also tells us that the wisdom of man is foolish to God.
Right.
The wisdom of God is foolish to man. So we may be mad in that sense, right?
Yeah. Could be.
I feel safer saying that than the Bible's wrong.
No, I'm not going to say the Bible's wrong.
And thank you for illustrating my point, not the brain altogether.
I think part of that is, too, because we sometimes forget about Satan. And Satan is always interfering with our thoughts.
Yeah.
So there will be some times that we will err from what we know is right.
Right.
And, you know, we all have a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
So I can see that this is kind of what he's saying too, because we all have that problem.
Yeah.
So the conclusion is the Bible's not wrong.
Correct.
Okay.
I think we all agree to that. I think we all agree to that. So we just, I think he's just saying there is evil, and sometimes that is actually madness or insanity, but not always. And insanity may not. Well, I don't make a professional statement because don't know anything about that profession. I was going to say some madness or insanity would not always lead to someone doing evil. Is that fair to say, Connie?
True.
So, and just because you do evil doesn't mean you're insane or mad. But there are times, perhaps, they do go together. So, anybody else? So number four, in verse 3, Solomon says that there is one thing under the sun that happens to us all. What is it? Death. Absolutely. Unless we're still walking around when Jesus comes back, we will all face death. So who still has hope in verses 4 and 5?
The living.
Yeah, the living. Why? Why does he say that?
Something's still going to happen to us.
He uses the example of a live dog is better than a dead lion. Why do you think he'd use that illustration?
It's a good illustration. A dead lion is not going to have any hope for it. He's not going to have a next meal.
Okay.
A live dog does have a chance at the next meal.
Right.
Which is really what the animal wants.
And that's what we all want, basically. We all want.
As humans, we want a lot more.
I think he says anyone who's still alive is better off than people who are dead.
And why?
And you can have hope if you're still alive.
Okay.
And you can have further rewards if you're still alive.
Was that, exactly. When you're dead, you're dead, right?
Now, interestingly enough, this does contradict something he said earlier about those that are dead are fortunate to not be in this world, doesn't he?
He says something similar here later in which we're going to get to in five, I think verses 5 and 6 actually, or 5. Just hold on to that. We'll see if that covers it. So, yeah, if you're still living, you still have hope. But if you're dead, you're like Rover. You're dead all over. So
you still have hope of what?
Everything, eternity. Salvation.
Okay.
Everything. Yeah. Right. Right. We don't always say everything. But we never say never. Yeah.
Sin leads to death.
Correct.
Well, so it would be insane to willingly sin. Everybody sins. So what that when he's talking about insanity is just that kind of insanity. Why would you, if sin leads to death and you know it, it's insane to do it, but we all do it.
A lot of times we sin though when we don't realize we're sinning. It's not that we wake up this, you know, in the morning and say, "Oh, I'm going to sin today." We hopefully have the attitude, "I'm going to try not to sin today," but we're human, so we're going to sin. You know, 99.999, which I think is the closest you can get to perfect as you can get, we're going to sin.
But Lynn, I think, Brad, you make a good point. We often talk about no sin leads to death, but we keep sinning. Aren't we crazy?
It's insane to do.
The way you structure your question or statement, yeah, you are correct. So. He said that's his first time being correct. Oh, really? So, number 6. What is said of the dead in verses 5 and 6? They know nothing. What else?
No more reward.
No more reward. Reward. No love. Hatred. Envy. Anybody say envy? All right. It says that they remember no more, or what does it say? No longer have a share, and all that is done. In other words, they don't participate in anything else. But number 7, look at question number 7. Why do the dead no longer have any reward? Verse 5. Okay, I hear mumbling, but I haven't heard anybody answer the question. Why do the dead no longer have any reward? In the New American, it says the dead do not know anything, nor have they any longer a reward, for their memory is forgotten. What does it mean for your memory to be forgotten? Does that mean you no longer remember anything? Or does it mean no one remembers you?
No one remembers you.
Okay.
He says their name is forgotten.
Okay. I spent most of the day yesterday at a family reunion. There's a lot of names thrown around and a lot of pictures that I didn't know those folks. They were a lot, you know, before my time. And there were some pictures of folks that nobody knew. I should say nobody. The guy that had the program, of course, he knew who they were, but we didn't remember, we didn't know any of those folks.
So they're not remembered, the answer to your...
Yeah, they are forgotten.
Okay,
forgotten. For the most part. Yeah, yeah. Other than a few family members. What is the statement? Is it 3 generations? You go 3 generations beyond someone's life? And they're forgotten for the most part. So something like that. I mean, I barely remember my granddaddy. He died when I was 4 years old. So I barely remember him. My dad, of course, remembered him. And he barely remembers his granddad. I mean, we're getting two or three generations back. So
there is a significance to the phrase, even to the 3rd generation.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's talking about sin primarily, but it still falls in line here to some degree. So. Any comments? Questions? Back row is being kind of quiet today. So in number 8, verse 5 says that the living knows they will die, but the dead know nothing. What does it mean that the dead do not know anything? Is there no awareness or consciousness after death? Is there any awareness or consciousness after death?
Not in the body.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. How would we know? Is that what you asked?
No, I said it's not. There's no memory in the body.
Oh, okay.
Because we are talking about under the sun.
Correct. You said, what did you say?
How would we know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
People who die during surgery and shadow above the operation table and then live and come back, they know, and they were dead.
Perhaps.
No, their spirit.
That's pretty factual.
Their spirit knows. But if the spirit is out of the body for a time and then goes back in, the body has no memory.
Well, the spirit's got to have a consciousness because it knows judgment's going to be there.
This is actually really interesting because those memories, I wonder sometimes, is that more connected to our spirit, our soul? Because I think we're going to have some of those memories when we leave this body.
So we don't want to run too far down this rabbit trail.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole.
I don't want to run down this road.
Because there's
a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
Whether it's, and I'm not. You coming from the medical side, I understand.
Well, how do you explain a protege that 3 years old can play Beethoven?
I don't know. I can't. No.
They get that knowledge from somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But Margo's talking about the near death experience or out of body experience. Yeah.
To see things down the hall that were outside the view.
So there's a lot of debate on that, and I'm not saying either way. So Bernard.
I mean, because I've experienced this. My mother's dead. I told her something that we were going to get to several blocks before I even got there, and I had never been in that town before.
Really?
So how do you explain that?
Yeah.
Because she looked at me and said, "Boy, you've been here before."
Yeah. I can't explain it. Jim?
We do have one example.
What's that?
Jesus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He came back in the resurrection.
Right.
He knew all the people.
Okay.
He talked about things that had happened.
Right.
I think we're all saying the same thing, is that there's something beyond our comprehension right now. And
there's a lot of things, yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be an exciting time to find out some things.
Well, how about the rich man and Lazarus? Remember that story? Rich man dies, goes to hell. He calls up and says, "Send Lazarus to tell my brothers, you know, about what could happen, blah blah blah." Y'all know the story. What's the story with that? What's the point of that?
Even if someone had come back to the dead, your brothers would not believe.
Okay. Anybody else have a thought?
They're on their own.
So while the rich man could remember earthly things, how he once lived, how his brothers lived, etc., it is apparent that his knowledge was limited to what he remembered. He had no knowledge of current happenings, and he no longer could contact or have any influence over earthly events. So he knew what was going on, remembered what was going on, but he couldn't do a thing about it. And I believe that's what verse 5 is saying.
He was also in the middle of a sermon, and he was talking in parables.
Okay. So you don't think it was a true story, you just think it was a parable?
That's what I
think. Okay, that's fine. I said perhaps, yeah. I don't think we could fully understand if we knew. You know, so I don't think our human brain could fully understand all the ins and outs of it. That's my opinion. So you're. You can disagree. I'll still love you. So, any other comments on the consciousness and the dead not having a memory, their memory being forgotten?
Just wanted a quick comment.
Yeah.
Right? So
he's finally kindly understanding that he's supposedly the wisest man, but he don't understand it, everything.
Yeah, and so he's talking, I think he's talking about life and death and the more limited, his experience and his observation.
Yeah.
Not so much the afterlife, because I think, like you said, he doesn't understand it. So I think that's what he's...
Yeah, good.
That's
good.
What this is kind of really doing.
Good point.
I think someone in here said the wiser you get, the dumber you realize you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone in here said that.
Well, I've heard it said, yeah. Did y'all hear what David said? Back row? Y'all hear David? Repeat it and speak
the,
out.
The wiser you get, the dumber you realize you are.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry to keep saying things, but so
why do we have class? It's for people to talk.
Solomon,
otherwise, we talk during Gary's sermons. So
Solomon is just a human man. And just because he's saying these things in Ecclesiastes doesn't make them right, like if God had said these things.
Well, that's true.
So he could be wrong. It's his guess. It's his summation. And it could be incorrect.
I think we have to be careful to say if it's in the Bible, it's wrong.
That's right.
I feel that. That's my position on that. No, I can safely say we may not understand it.
He could be making statements that he cannot prove.
Shane has the answer. Go ahead.
So, to me, Ecclesiastes, especially parts of it, certainly this part, to me, is a contextual point of view statement. Okay? So Solomon is not making some grandiose spiritual salvation observation here.
Yeah.
What he's doing is he's making a wise observation about earthly life that is absolutely true. We don't go to the graveyard and dig people up to find out the answers to our questions,
yeah,
because they're not going to answer them.
Yeah.
We don't win money in a lottery and take it to our great-grandmother's grave and say, here's your share.
Yeah.
This is not the way life works. And his observation here is about the way the world works and all the things he's seen through the contextual eyes of a human being. And what he sees is that everyone dies. The good, the bad, the ugly. They all die.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is forgotten in time, because once you're dead and you're buried, people forget you exist. No one includes you in the payout. No one includes you in the earthly reward. No one comes to you for advice anymore because you're dead. And so to me it's a contextual thing. This is not Jesus giving the grand statement about,
yeah,
the salvation of the human soul and eternity with God and all those types of things. This is a really wise man who's looking at life on earth under the sun, and he's saying, these are the things that I see happening in this world under the sun. And so I think we have to be a little bit careful when we read Ecclesiastes, because when he makes statements like this, I do not believe what he's saying is, once you're dead and it's over.
Yeah.
I think what he's saying is, from a worldly, under the sun point of view, the dead die, they're buried, and they're no longer part of the equation.
Yeah.
And that's the way the world works.
Yep.
And so I don't. I think we're hurting ourselves if we start to say, well, Solomon's trying to give us this perspective on the soul. I really don't think that's what he's doing here. I think he's giving us a perspective on life.
Yeah.
And the way life works, and the way the physical world works, and an understanding.
Yeah.
And that's my perspective.
You live, you die, you're buried. Over time, you're forgotten. This is the synopsis. Jimmy?
Like David said, I'm not much stupid. So I go to kindergarten versions.
Okay.
The kindergarten version says the living know they will die. Dead know nothing. Dead people have no more reward after people forgive them. After people are dead, they can no longer love or hate or envy. They'll never again share what's happened here on earth. I think that kind of makes the same point.
Yeah, yeah.
This is interpretation of Scripture, since we don't read Hebrew and Greek.
Right.
Look at the,
maybe only one or two people in this room that could do that, so. Anybody else have a thought?
What Shane was saying, I think that big qualifying thing is under the sun.
Under the sun. Here on earth, yep.
I think that's very important that it's the physical world.
Yeah. So number 9, we're running out of time. What vanished long ago? Verse 6.
Nothing.
Yeah, the love, hatred, and the envy of the dead people. Number 10, what ultimately happens to the deeds that have been done under the sun?
Forgotten.
They perish or forgotten. What startling pronouncement does God make in Ecclesiastes 9:7? Look at 9:7. What startling pronouncement does God make?
Go have a balanced life.
Exactly. Have a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Which could open up a can of worms, that statement, couldn't it? So what does the preacher counsel the living to do? Verses 7 through 10. All right. He breaks some things down here. Eat and drink your food with joy. Adorn yourself with good apparel. Live joyfully with the wife of your youth. And of course, today with the gender thing, we need to say live joyfully with your husband of your youth. Work diligently. Anything else in there? He's encouraging people to enjoy their life, which is what God intended. People's nicest clothes. Oh, this is where this comes in. He makes a statement about keep your clothes white and the oil on your head overflowing or something like that. What verse is it?
Eight.
Verse 8. Let your clothes be white all the time and let not oil be lacking on your head. What in the world does that mean? We should always be wearing white?
Cleansiness.
Yeah. Okay.
David Barry.
Yeah.
David Barry. The man in white. We'll get him to answer. What does wearing white mean? Why is he telling people to wear white? Okay, clear. And Bob or Pat said clean. Yeah, but purity. What does it mean by the oil flowing, not be lacking on your head? What does that mean? What's that a reference to?
Anointing.
And what does the oil represent?
Part of it was good grooming, and part of it was watch your health.
Okay.
And then only the rich could do that.
That is true for the most part.
I was recently in the company of someone from another country, and I thought it was very interesting that he has an oil regimen that he would sit with oil on his head, allow it to soak in for a while, and he'd be back with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very interesting.
Kind of a meditation?
No, it was
thing?
Just health. Complete.
Skin care,
hair.
Oh, yeah.
Care. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have a commentary point on that. People's nicest clothes in those days were white clothes. They wore them on special occasion, kind of like your Sunday go-to-meeting clothes. People used oil on their skin. The hot sun would burn the skin, so the oil prevented it. To put oil on the head, sometimes referred to God, it meant that he was blessing a person in a special way. And of course, the reference is 23rd Psalm. So that's a thought I found.
Frankincense was an oil, and didn't really have medicinal purposes.
Oh yeah, a lot of the essential oils does. Yeah, yeah, lavender does, peppermint. I mean, most of them do. So, what should people do with whatever their hands find to do?
Do it with all your might.
Do what?
Whatever whatever.
All right, whatever you find to do. That's working, playing, whatever.
This is a very important verse.
It really is.
This is a life, quality of life verse. These all are, but this really speaks to me.
Actually, it's either a chapter coming up. He actually talks about laziness. So how are we to do it? And that is work with all our might. How about with our strength? So we put 100% into it. What is the word picture in Ecclesiastes verse 10? Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10. Is there a word picture here?
Would it be Sheol, meaning hell?
Okay.
Is that a word picture?
That is a word picture. New American Standard actually uses the word Sheol. Rob's translation did not, but that's okay. Let's go to 17, number 17. What is Solomon's illustration of wisdom? Verses 13 through 16.
Better than folly.
Yeah. Wisdom is better than strength, wisdom and folly. What happened to the poor man, the wise man? What happened to the poor wise man who by his wisdom saved the city? We've already talked about it. He was forgotten. And what observations did he make about the value of wisdom? We've kind of already touched on some of them. Wisdom is better than strength. Poor man's wisdom is often despised. Quiet words of the wise should be heard rather than the shout of ruler of fools. And wisdom is better than weapons of war. And that in your conclusion, the third paragraph, Dr. Philip Ryken makes an interesting comparison when commenting on the parable in verses 13 through 19. And there's that word, Janice. This guy thinks this is a parable also, right? So anyway, most Christians can distinguish good from evil. The trouble, however, is that some of the most important choices in life are not between good and evil, but between wisdom and folly. And if we wrapped up chapter 9 in 140 characters or less, the same fate comes to all. A living dog is better than a dead lion. Even the days of your vain life, wisdom is better than strength. And that comes from Chris Juby. Put all those together. So I've kind of skipped some stuff that we didn't cover, but that's the whole reason I give you a handout, so you can take it home and fill in the blanks that we skipped over. Okay, we moved kind of fast because we're over time already. Any comments, questions, whatever? Vaughn had an announcement, but he's tied up with his Seekers class today, so we'll get him next time. All right, next week we'll look at chapter 10. So you can be reading that ahead of time, chapter 10.